Welcome to No Instructions. I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh.
And we're back!
Hey, man.
How's it going?
I haven't seen you since July. You were lost in the jungle for a very long time.
So the last time we recorded was July. I looked it up this morning.
Really?
I was curious. Yeah.
Our birthdays?
Yeah.
And it's almost Halloween.
It's almost Halloween in a couple of days.
Wow.
Which is crazy. But at the same time, like, we see each other every day, so it doesn't feel like it's been that long. But for everybody listening or watching on YouTube, it has been a very long time, so we're back.
We've gotten a lot of supportive comments asking about the podcast.
Yes.
Because, oh, dang, like, we had the Maker Alliance summer camp in that time.
Yeah. A lot has happened.
So much has happened.
Yeah.
Do we want to ignore the past, or do we want to hit touch points?
Let's. I mean, if something is relevant, let's get people up to speed. We may as well. We don't
go back that far.
Unless there's something very specific you want to talk about, we could talk about. I haven't watched Andor yet.
I watched a little bit of it.
So I can't really talk about that.
It's like a spy show.
Yeah. It looks cool. I watched the first episode, but that's as far as I got.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I don't know if we ever talked about Obi-Wan. But that's like ancient
history at
this point.
There was like one part of Obi-Wan that I liked. Other than that, I felt it unnecessary.
Oh.
There was She-Hulk. You remember?
Yeah.
You mean that show where Daredevil showed up one time? And it had a whole bunch of other episodes that didn't have Daredevil in it?
My kids liked She-Hulk. So it's got that going for it.
Well, good for them.
Yep.
I am not your kid. I did not like it. I mean, I didn't hate it. I was just kind of bored. And it was not for me. And then the final episode where it just like went off the rails and was so self-aware and breaking down fourth and fifth and UI walls. And it was just, okay.
Yeah.
Like, come on. You just didn't have a story. And they're like, it would be fun if we broke so many different paradigms that we just made it so unique. I've never seen it before. And just because you haven't seen it before, it's probably happened for a reason.
That's true.
Yeah. It's not like Andy Griffith was like, screw this, and just like went through the TV into CBS, through PBS, into ABC, and then yelled at the owner of ABC for his show being bad. That's what happened.
Sure.
And then Daredevil showed up. Unrelated.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that show for a lot of reasons. Not just that, but that was definitely one of them. But other than TV stuff, what's been going on?
We had the Maker Alliance summer camp. That was in August.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge hit.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
Did you have a good time?
I did. I was not there very much. Not there as much as I would have liked to have been. Just logistics of family stuff throughout that weekend and life. I can't get these pieces together.
Ironically, my kids and my family were there more than I thought that they would be.
Hmm.
Yeah. Because we had a thing that like people were coming to our hometown to have this camp. And so we were kind of cautious because a lot of people we had never met before. And we set clear expectations about like, you know, this is being put on by the Maker Alliance. This is not necessarily being put on by I Like to Make Stuff. So we don't have like tours or anything set. And please don't try to come to our house. And so we had I think we were guarded a little bit. And then when we got there, we realized that all the people that were there were super kind and accommodating and nice and all there for the right reasons and had a lot of stuff going on. Like there were classes going on. There was a big like Pinewood Derby that my kids super loved. There was a lot of interesting things and a lot of people having a great time getting together, making things, learning from each other, getting to fellowship with like-minded people. It was really fantastic, and I was really proud of the group to put it on.
Absolutely. They did an amazing job, and yeah, it was cool to be a part of it. I wish that I had been there more, but it was really nice to see something like that be put together and maintained without us.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was encouraging to see ownership and management and all that stuff was taken, and people had a blast.
Absolutely.
That was the important thing.
We're already planning for next year.
Yeah.
Because they had to reserve the camp, and so it's happening again.
Yeah. It'll be next summer sometime.
Yeah, right around the same time, next August.
And it's exclusive to the Maker Alliance, so, you know, if you were interested in getting together with a bunch of awesome people, join the Maker Alliance.
It's a good time.
Yeah, definitely.
Let me see. So that was in August. I don't remember any of the other months.
We went to California.
Oh, yeah. Oh dang. We did go to California. Good job, Megan. August.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I completely blacked out that chunk of my life.
Yeah.
I had to drive across the country. That's what Megan says. We had to go to California. Them going to California was significantly different than me going to California.
Yep.
So I did ride in a middle seat, though.
Oh, man. Megan had to ride in a middle seat on a plane. I had to drive a 12-foot box truck 2,400 miles across the country by myself. So, okay, let's talk about California. Like, how did that whole thing come about?
The whole thing came about with... So the Silicon event, Adam Savage's Silicon thing, they reached out and wanted me to come speak and, you know, like be on panels and stuff like that. And so we figured that would be a fun thing to do. And while we were out there, we decided to go ahead and take advantage of some other opportunities, people we knew in the area, in California, different parts of California, and like finish a video that we've been working on for a couple of years with Pat Flynn, which was hilarious. But it was a good opportunity to get it done. And then, you know, we started looking at, well, who else do we know in California? What else can we come up with to make that trip as beneficial as possible? And then we just scheduled a whole bunch of stuff. You guys put together an awesome schedule and itinerary, how to fit everything in. And it was a very, very full week. 10 days or I don't even know how long it was.
It was more than a week.
More than a week. Felt like a year. But it was a lot of California. You know, we were doing stuff the entire time. We went into L.A., did stuff down there, and then had to drive up to Silicon Valley, did stuff up there, and then flew back. And it was a lot. It was good.
What are some of your favorite points?
Favorite points. Hanging out with Frank Ippolito at his shop was just awesome. Like, it was just so cool. I mean, Frank's great. And so that was cool, being with him. And he is very... no nonsense. I don't care what anybody thinks of me. I do good work and I'm just going to do my work. And so listening to him talk about things and about how he does his stuff is funny. So he's great. But then also just the work around him, that the people that work with him and him do, that collaboration in the facility that he's put together, which apparently he's moving again.
So Frank Ippolito is a Hollywood prop maker.
Yes.
Who has been in... who has made props for all of the things that we love.
Yeah, pretty much.
If you've watched The Mandalorian, which I imagine if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have, there was an episode where The Mandalorian took the Razorcrest's ship and like went to this water planet, and his ship crashed into the water. It was one of the most beautiful like special effects scenes I'd seen in a long time. This crane picked him up out of the water and set him on a dock where there was a Mon Calamari, the squid face guy, in his blue sweater, and that was Frank.
Yeah.
They made all of the heads for that show, all the masks for all the Mon Calamari, and he actually got to be in it. And so he didn't have any speaking lines, I don't think. He just like looked up irritatingly at this ship that plopped down in front of him, and it's like, oh, that guy inside that thing, inside that suit is a guy that we kind of know tangentially.
Yeah. But he's made all sorts of stuff. It was just ridiculous walking through his office. A lot of it we couldn't shoot because he didn't want – he has his own versions of a lot of the things that he's made for shows. And, you know, a lot of that he doesn't want to show off because he doesn't want to make it look like he has stuff that he shouldn't have. Even
is
though
he not supposed to keep
the No, pieces? It's okay for him to make his own, but he shouldn't show them off, I guess, is the kind of idea. He just didn't want to get in any trouble. And
because that's so, business for him. That's not just like, oh, Mickey Mouse is calling, yelling at me. That could hinder future kind of relationships.
Yeah. So, but then some of the stuff he had was actually screen used, and then he got to keep it. Part of the agreement was he got it back when they were done with it or whatever.
And that would be a cool agreement.
Yeah, for real. So I've never seen all of Umbrella Academy.
But I saw an episode or two.
I saw the first couple. Yeah. But later on, apparently there are these big samurai-looking suits of armor that kind of come to life or something. And he had, I think they were the screen used ones. All three of these things, and he said that the actors that went in them were all 6'10". That's how big these things were. And they were on mannequins of the right size in this room, and there were three of them next to each other. So it was just like this wall of giant. Just like it was, they were so big and kind of scary looking. But anyway, those were the screen-used ones that he got to take back. That was really cool. And then he was telling us about, excuse me, while we were there, he was like, this is from Bullet Train, and this is from Bullet Train, and my arms and my legs are in this one scene. And I didn't really know much about it, so we watched the trailer, and it looked like a lot of fun, so we all went and saw it together while we were there. And it was really cool to be like, oh, yeah, that's a...
Some of us had different experiences that day. We went to go see Bullet Train. Yeah. And if you could hear the gentle laughter rumble throughout the room, we decided... So the way that the trip went is that we originally all four were going to fly out there. The giant pin board that was in a video that we made for Mark Rober was taking a little longer than anticipated. We needed it to be not broken when it showed up. So we made the decision to, like, let's go get the smallest possible vehicle that we can that will allow us to drive it to California and then leave it there, which was a 12-foot box truck. And then I drove it out 4 days while they went and did stuff in L.A. because it would just work out that way. And so the day that we all met back up together in San Mateo, or in Palo Alto in Silicon Valley, like, you guys had, like, a cool, like, little vacation work trip all together. And then I showed up and, like, you guys had fun little inside jokes. And there was a gross, disgusting silicone hand that was flopping around in a van that was in the video. Like, and so you guys were, like, having a great time and it was fun. And I was kind of feeling left out. And then we went to go see this movie. And I think we had another bonding moment that evening where we were going to leave the movie. And it was great. And you get back in the van. And walking up to the movie theater, they had, like, this thing that looked like a trash can or, like, a big gumball dispenser kind of thing. It looked like a dragon capsule, like on a SpaceX rocket.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
So I thought that's what it was. And then we were going back out to the van, and the little SpaceX rocket gumball machine-looking thing was, like, in the middle of the parking lot. And I was like, oh, look, I bet some hooligans decided to take the gumball machine thing and just move it as, like, a funny prank. And then it was rolling away from us, and Megan was driving the van the whole time because she rented the van. And then the gumball machine stopped and did a slow turn and stared at her and then aggressively moved toward the van while she was driving. And I guess
this
it's
is like in the lane as we're trying to pull.
Yeah, oh, so Anthony has it on screen if you're watching the YouTube video. This is Megan being attacked by a rolling security guard robot. That's what it is. It has a bunch of cameras and apparently it just like there's Megan's screaming face. And then we're just laughing.
You absolutely were.
It was very scary.
So apparently there's just this company that makes these roving robots that just record stuff. And apparently it like reduces crime by some percentage just because there is a presence. And I think it's mostly because
people are laughing at the
hoodlums,
robot.
Yeah, are making fun of this thing.
I mean,
or apparently having a panic attack. That could have been that too. I mean, the diamond heist was going to go off without a hitch until they had a panic attack because the roving robot stared them down. But that was something that none of us had ever seen before, and it was pretty fun.
I never want to see again.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Megan had a fun experience.
But so just to give some context, she was legitimately upset about that. Right after that, we drove down the street to go to In-N-Out to get some food, and she stayed in the car.
Yeah.
And she was like, you guys go in and get your food. I'm just going to sit here in the quiet for a minute. She stayed there. Well, and it took us a long time.
It did. In-N-Out took a minute.
But...
Anyway. You were also yelling directions at me of where to turn, and I was fully ignoring everything you said.
Oh, yeah, because we did circles in that parking lot, and then we came across
that was a confusing parking
the Terminator lot. Again. Oh, sorry, it was fun. We don't mean to laugh at you. We were trying to laugh with you, but
I mean,
then you stopped laughing.
I was kind of laughing at her.
Yeah, she's
leaving. See ya. Anyway, so yeah, there was that. That was definitely a fun part of the trip. The whole trip was fun. What was your favorite part of your portion? Obviously, the driving across country was probably not your favorite part.
No, that sucked. I think hanging out at Mark Rober's shop was really fun. Not only did we get to, like, you know Mark. You have his phone number. You've had conversations with him. None of us, we know Mark as much as we see him on the internet. So there was a little fanboy kind of action. Mm-hmm. But, like, that – the shop that he has, I think, is a shop that is perfectly equipped for what we do. And so for us to go into that shop and, like, it is fun, it is purposeful, it is practical yet very impractical in other ways. Like, I could see us working in that space. So it was really fun, like – for a fanboy moment and, like, professionally, like, yep, I want to work in here too. They had the same size CNC that we have that their engineer Josh and I, we were talking for quite a while about a lot of different things. It was kind of funny, like, things that we have figured out about working with businesses on the internet, like, they haven't had to do and they're just now starting to do. And so they had some equipment. And I'm like, oh, did you talk to so-and-so at the company to get that thing? And he just kind of stared at me. He's like, I don't know who that is. We paid a lot of money for this thing. And I was like, oh, I got to hook you up with this person. And we got to talk to this person. And so it was – professionally, it was a really good interaction between people that do similar stuff than we do. And they're trying to figure it out just as much as we try to figure it out. Like my middle son gave me a Hot Wheels car because he wanted me to put it on their world record Hot Wheels track. And he was like, oh, man, that thing stopped working like the second after we did that video. It's just because the building gets so hot, like the plastic started to warp and it came apart. And like they had tracks in the video, if you see it, like they have tracks that are just like impractically placed across like doorways and stuff. And so it was kind of funny that like when we build a project, we want it to work and we want it to be useful. And sometimes we just want to learn how to do a thing and it just kind of doesn't work out the way we want. But through movie magic or...
Or long enough.
Yeah, long enough to get the point across. And then it just doesn't work anymore, or it just doesn't have the same interest. Well, they had the same thing.
Yeah.
And they were shooting stuff on iPhones. And so their massive presence, when you get to peek behind the curtain and you understand how they get to where they get, it's kind of fun to see someone else do it.
Mm-hmm.
You go to someone else's kitchen and you get to see the ingredients. The ingredients are the same. They just put them together a little bit different, but it's not as fancy as you may have imagined that it would have been. But yeah, we were there for two days just hanging out, getting to play around. And my kids are jealous every time that they see it or they talk about it. I got to hang out with the Crunch Labs box creators, and my middle son absolutely loves those Crunch Lab boxes. And I was asking them, like, if they were working on the next year's batch. He's like, as a matter of fact, we are. And so we were – he had one of the things, and he was trying to figure out how to get this thing – I'm being very cryptic – how to get this thing to rotate and stop and index so that it could do a thing. And so I got to, like, not help out, but, like, offer a little suggestion and then look on the little whiteboard and draw on the little whiteboard. And then came back the next day, and he had taken, like, some of the stuff that he and I and this other girl had talked about and, like, made it work. And so it was just that prototyping and building things and making a tangible thing and solving a problem, like, doesn't stop just because we leave our shop. And I think it was even more fun that that muscle flexed the same way in a completely different environment.
Yeah.
So that was the most fun for me. It was practical fun.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the most enjoyable fun. It's very practical fun.
That's cool.
But then we got to fly back. I didn't have to drive
anymore. Yeah.
I got to fly in an airplane.
We did Silicon, which was fine.
It was neat.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a little bit strange in that there were so many things happening at the con at the same time. Bless you. Forby sneezed in the other room. There's so many things happening that sometimes we would be on stage and, you know, there's like five people in the room because across the hall, all of the model makers from ILM are talking about episode one. You know, I mean, it's like, well, I would like to be over there instead of listening to me. But so that was a little bit weird that they had a lot of crossover of some really amazing thing. Ah!
Got him.
If you're watching the video, Josh is trying to pinch
my
head.
I'm crushing your head.
But yeah, it was a good event. And I still have not met Adam Savage face to face, which is just funny. It doesn't bother me, but it was funny to be like, we talked on the video call and he was all excited about me coming out and we were going to shoot some videos together and all that stuff. And then there he was just completely busy and everybody wants his attention, that type of thing. So,
but you got to talk to Jen, right? Jen Schechter.
Oh yeah.
Who is special projects awesome. Director and who put on a majority of that con.
Oh yeah.
There was a lot of purposeful like maker space and like hands on do things rather than just like going around and looking at stuff at this one. And that was all her.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to participate in a build off, which was pretty fun and unique for us that there were, I don't know, like five or six teams of random people. Some people we knew, some people we had never met before. And the brief was that aliens had come to Earth and you had to greet them as best you can or something. I don't know. Something along those lines. It's like we had like a Tyvek suit and a bunch of like paints and craft supplies. And we had – how long was it, like an hour?
Yeah.
Yeah, to like build a thing or build a costume or build something to like welcome the aliens to Earth. And I thought it was really fun. And it was kind of different for us, like, because we would normally plan a whole bunch of stuff or, you know, we use a lot of materials that we weren't really used to using. But I had a blast. I thought it was a really great time.
Yeah,
I got to, like, spray paint you in the middle of a giant room full of people.
It was interesting for sure. I mean, it was definitely different, you know, just using what's right in front of you and not trying to accomplish something like functional.
Yeah.
Like, that was a weird thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like,
I wanted to know more about the aliens so I could better like produce the thing effectively.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's just, we just get to be silly. And so building something just to be silly, like, I can't remember the last time I've done that.
Yeah. And the other people seem to be really good at it and used to it. And some of the costumes and the ridiculousness was awesome.
Like, yeah.
It was so good. And some of the people were definitely performers, you could tell. And I'm not. So there's that. But yeah, that was a good time. Anything else about California? It feels like it was a really long time ago at this point. So, but life has moved on. What else is going on in life?
I had to say goodbye to my Jeep the other day. R.I.P.
Yeah.
So Megan brought up a point the other day. So my Jeep has been slowly kind of mechanically dying and costing me a whole lot of money to try to keep the plug plugged in, so to speak. And so I got a new vehicle, which was, I think, drama all in itself. But I was going to get a smaller vehicle because it was cheaper and I didn't really want it. I changed my mind last minute, got the vehicle that I did want. But I had to drive my Jeep like 45 minutes up the road to the CarMax dealership. And it has mechanical issues, which I know, which I wasn't going to tell them outright. I'll let them figure it out on their own. But so the whole time I was just kind of stressed, but it was fine. But all the while of driving up there, like, I thought about, like, the Jeep, and I thought about my life and every time the Jeep has been with me. Because I've had this vehicle for 17 years. And it has traveled across the country several times. It went with me to Belgium whenever we were in the army. Like, it's always just been there. And Megan and I were talking the other day, and I don't remember how it got to this, but she was like, so you can just, like, compartmentalize things in your brain. I'm like, yeah. Like, I don't know, as a boy or as just a very stoic person, that's something I'm particularly proud of. Like, I can just kind of lock it away. Whatever it was, it doesn't matter right now, so I'll just focus on what I need to right now. And the Jeep is a thing that, of all of those locked doors, the Jeep is the thread that goes through all of those doors, like almost all of them. And driving up the road and just like thinking about those things, like pulled that thread and like opened up all of those locked doors for not necessarily like angry or sad or black memories, but like sad stuff, happy stuff, exciting stuff, monumental, like new chapter in life kind of things. Like, it's like if you, I don't want to spoil it, but like you watch Harry Potter, like when Hedwig died.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Like, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
It's like if at the end of Star Wars, if they just like threw R2-D2 in a trash compactor. Like, that's what I felt like I was doing.
Right. Yeah.
And boy, I started crying.
Yeah.
I started crying for like a 40 stinking minute drive up the road. And I was listening to music.
Oh,
and
like that makes it worse.
A song would trigger a memory in the Jeep that is like, ugh. And I was going to crash. And when I got there, the car that I originally planned on getting that I paid to have shipped there, like, I did not like. I didn't like it. I was already upset that I was giving up the Jeep. And I'm like, I'm not going to sacrifice the Jeep for this car. This is not what I want. And so we spent a little extra money and I got the thing that I did want. And it is working out. It is much better. I'm much happier at that idea.
Good.
So I have a new car now for the first time in 17 years.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's, you know, it's cool. This one has like buttons and can like do stuff. Yeah. The Jeep had a CD player. Like, that was cool. I listened to my Mouse Rat CD over and over again, but like, it's kind of nuts. Like, I have a keyless remote start.
Oh, nice.
And it's cold outside.
Yeah.
And I'm a big baby, as we have amply discussed. And so I can just like turn on the car and it just warms up while I'm in the house doing stuff, which I know in a lot of places is like taboo to do. But no way, dude. I've never done that before. I'm doing it every day. It's great. It's super cool.
Yeah.
But I got a Subaru Outback, which in my very stoic quantitative analysis when trying to figure out what car I should get, that one won on paper. It had the most little logic nuggets and...
logic nuggets.
Yeah. And so while I was looking at this car, I'm like, this thing has almost the same amount of cargo space as the Jeep. I'm like, that's amazing. I'm like, yeah, you figured that out when you did your research. I was like, oh, well, look at this. Like, this is far more fuel efficient. I'm like, hey, yeah, you already did that tally.
Yeah.
But I think the coolest thing is that when I looked at the engine, I don't remember why I forgot this, but the oil filter on the four-cylinder boxer engine that Subaru has is pointed straight up on top of the engine. Right there.
Oh, super easy to get to.
And it has a little collar around the bottom, so when you unplug it, the oil just goes into that collar.
Nice.
And I just like one of those things that you're just so dumbfounded about. Like, why doesn't this exist everywhere?
Yeah.
This is the smartest thing any automaker has ever done.
Hmm.
So yeah.
That is smart. Well, that's cool.
There was a meme Bad that dumb. I found the other day that there was a guy talking to his kids, and he says he wanted to get an Outback. And the kids were like, an Outback is just an SUV for old ladies so they don't have to step down as far. And he was like, no way, cool dudes drive them too. And he says, so my kids have been taking a tally every time they see one, and their results were like 62 old ladies and like 4 cool dudes. And so now as I drive around, I see one, I'm like, okay. I'm like, nope, that's an old lady. So I'm keeping tally, and I am definitely in the trough of that.
Well, but it's all relative. So if you saw a whole bunch of cool dudes... you'd be like, I don't know if I'm as cool as that dude. But you are definitely cooler than all of the old ladies that you see. Well, maybe. Not necessarily. But probably cooler than all the old ladies.
Maybe. Pretty. I have a podcast and they probably don't.
I don't know. These days.
Yeah. Meemaw might have one. Which had Meemaw on.
Meemaw. There are all sorts of interesting pieces in this Vespa set that I'm finishing. Speaking of, I'm finishing the Vespa set after... a year and a half. I don't know how long I've been working on this one. What are you working on?
I'm working on the 3-in-1 Knight's Castle. So not the newest, biggest, massive castle.
Which I bought.
I know you did. It's still not as cool in my mind as the King's Castle. Like the one that I had previously whenever my oldest son was very, very young.
Yeah.
And that he smashed to pieces.
That's not it all the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I disagree. I mean, I haven't made it yet, so I'm looking at the box. But comparing it to... I had the original gray. Is that the one you're talking about? The original gray castle?
Mm-hmm. Not the original one. It's a much later release.
Oh, okay.
It's just called the Knight's Castle.
So...
and it's like a... it's a square. And it can open up.
Oh, yeah.
So it has four.
Yeah, that was mine. But is it gray?
It was gray. I didn't think it was that old, though.
Well, when I was a kid, I had a gray castle that opened up like that. It had like it was a square, but the back two... corners, the quadrants would fold out. So I don't know if that's the same one or not. But anyway, this new one, just looking at the box, is like, it's crazy. There's a lot to it. And it's a very expensive set, for sure. But I haven't even made this one that you're making yet. I have one. And I have stopped buying Lego sets now because I've got a backlog. Because I've got into the habit of like, oh, I really like that. I'm going to spend some money on myself and get this set, and then I'd get it, and I just don't have time to put it together. So I'm actually currently working on the NES system at home. And
that's a cool set.
I started it a couple of months ago, and then we have been super busy. We had family in town for a couple of weeks, and I just haven't gotten back to it. So I've definitely slowed down on my Lego building at home, which means I've slowed down on purchasing as well.
Yeah.
When the Atari set came out, I told Jenny and the kids, I'm like, all right, I'm not buying this one. And Christmas is coming up, so I'm not buying this one. I'm trying to lay it out there for them. I don't know if they got it or not. Probably not. But anyway, so I'm going to finish
Christmas
this.
Christmas is coming up.
Yeah. We started this year because my daughter actually said something she wanted for Christmas the other day in the middle of October. And... so I started a list. For the first time, we have a shared present list. So we can figure out, because what we always do is we like, for several months before Christmas, I see this for so-and-so and I'll pick this one up and I'll buy a bunch of toys when I'm by myself because I like to do that and the kids are a good excuse. And so I'll buy a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Christmas Eve, we dump all of it out on the bed after the kids go to bed. We dump all of it out And then I start separating piles. And at that point, it's too late. Like, if I went too heavy on one kid and not enough on the other, it's too late to buy stuff for him. So we're starting. And they're, now they want things instead of just, I want toys or I want books or I want video games. Now it's like, I want those jeans from Target, the ones with the holes right here and the holes right there. Or I want these, thank you, Megan, these Nike Super Air Max Jordan Max hold air holes things. Whatever. I don't know. They're all Nikes. And that was a joke because Megan has shoes. Has a lot of shoes. And she has influenced, partially influenced my daughter to also like a lot of shoes. It, but it's not just her. All of my kids are now into Nikes, and not because of you. But they are all of a sudden caring about shoes.
Yeah.
And whatever. That doesn't mean they get what they want. But, you know, when it comes to gifts, Christmas, if they're like, if they've been talking about a certain thing for a long time, we, you know. It's our opportunity to spend that extra money on them. So we've started a present list.
Mm.
So as we buy things or as we come up with ideas, we're putting it down there so we can load level and not go overboard.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy for me specifically to just go overboard and spend way too much money on stuff that they don't need at Christmas time. And we've got some birthdays around then too. So we have to make sure that we're getting enough for Christmas and birthday separately. But... anyway, yes,
my Christmas kids, is coming. My kids have already made Christmas lists.
Really?
Yeah, already.
Wow.
But the Amazon is, I think Amazon, Target, and probably a couple other stores have caught on
to threw that thing away.
The wish list.
I threw it away.
No, it's awesome. I think it's great. I think it is fantastic. It's a thing that throws back to our childhood, and they have the same reaction that we did when the Sears wish list came out.
Yeah.
But except they can't, like, find bras and stuff.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Womp, womp, womp. That magazine was fantastic. I don't know if you guys know about the Sears wish list. Nope. Megan and Anthony are 7 years younger. It's a super thick catalog that you can get just about everything. In the back, there was toys. A little bit before the back, there was video games. And then there was that one section of, like, the ping pong tables and pool tables. And, like, you can get the 5-in-1. Ping pong, pool table, shuffleboard, flip extravaganza thing that we always asked for and never got.
Yeah.
And then realized that after my friend had it, it was like 3/4 size and it was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
But if you look a little before then, you can get kitchen cabinets and fancy clocks, Hummel figurines, and then just like
so many
ladies' underwear. There was a lot of satin like robes and stuff. And so a lot of kids... I'm imagining a lot of kids just skip to the back and they're missing a lot of good stuff in the front of that Sears catalog.
But there's all those Hummel figures, man. Yeah,
there's a something high-waisted, goofy-looking 80s underwear. But there's websites now where you can go back and just like look at all of those catalogs page by page.
We found those. I think it was when we were recording an episode of this a long time
somebody
ago.
Somebody showed it to us and we went through and like for a day. And I found all the Centurion toys that I got back in the day.
And the coolest thing about those those catalogs and even the commercials at the time was they would take, and I distinctly remember this, trying to replicate this. They would take G.I. Joe figures or Mask or Transformers or Star Wars or whatever the toy. It's a tiny little piece of plastic. And to show off this piece of plastic, they would build this elaborate, like, natural-looking landscape with the high ground and with the low ground and with caves and with rocks and trees. And so these little figures were in a scale environment to the thing that they were trying to sell you. And when I looked at that, I'm like, my backyard doesn't look like that, or my couch doesn't look like that. Yeah. And it made it so realistic and just, you know, like it was almost like that's a tiny movie set and I can really play it out. And so I would spend a lot of time in my backyard trying to create those little scenarios. In fact, I remember even inside one winter, I got into this habit of taking my Empire Strikes Back sleeping bag and I would unzip it so that it was one big blanket, right? And then you pick up, this is a tip for kids these days, you pick up the middle of it, you just grab it and you pick it straight up like this, and then you set it down really slowly, and as you set it down, you kind of wiggle it around. And then when you let go, you've got a mountain. You've got a mountain with a bunch of little crevices and caves and stuff all around the inside that is just different every time you play.
Yeah.
So I would do that, and I've got pictures of me playing with my Star Wars figures on this little sleeping bag mountain that I would constantly make. And it was thick enough that it would kind of hold its shape. So, you know, you could, like, make a little cave and stick a guy in there so he would jump out and get somebody else or whatever. But I would constantly do stuff like that. And I think all of that was inspired from the TV commercials of the time, which did the same thing, but also that catalog. They would just have these elaborate scenarios. I miss that. I miss that a lot. One thing I've noticed about my kids who are now growing out of this, which is sad, is that my oldest son, when he would play with toys, he has this, and I did the same thing, but he has a way to create that cinematic, that movie set thing in his own vision. So he'll take the toy, and instead of, if anybody's not watching, this is not going to make any sense, but instead of holding the toys out here, you know, a lot of kids will just like, here's two toys, and they're playing, and my vision of this thing that's happening is third person, it's way out here, it's whatever. So he will take a toy or a couple of toys, and he'll like get it really close to his eye, and he focuses on the thing right here, which blurs out the background. And so he'll take a scenario like this and then get in there like he is the camera creating this scene. He's always done this. And so he'll get in there and like move around and, you know, move out so he sees the focus change and stuff. I've always thought that was really cool, and I've never known how to tell him what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like, you're creating a movie. That's so cool. In your play, and you don't even know it. But I hope he uses that somehow.
We took that same kind of catalog-esque setup, and we would make, like, fighting scenes in the backyard where you get that bucket of just, like, green army men from, like, Toy Story whose feet are on the little plank thing. And then they would just be, like, the bad guys, and you'd get the G.I. Joes or the other, like, cool, expensive toys, and they would be fighting the green guys because the green guys would melt. Yeah, and so we'd take, like, bottle rockets and stuff and, like, shoot them at the green guys. And I think there is probably a VHS tape of some – like war scene, because I remember a friend of mine had one, and we'd make like a little pool of lighter fluid
nice
and like make it look like a little river, and then put a little trough and like with your finger you dig in the mud and you'd shoot the bottle rocket, and then someone would like have a lighter off scene, and it would like woof, it would light the little tiny shallow pool of lighter fluid, and then the little green guys would melt. And but yeah, that same, like, we can build this up in the backyard and actually have, like, a in the dirt playing with the thing and not caring if your G.I. Joe gets mashed with mud and clay. And
did you have a sandbox growing up in Florida?
No, because Florida, if you're not aware,
is a sandbox.
A giant sandbox filled with ants.
Yeah.
Because a sandbox, a dedicated sandbox, became an ant farm.
Okay.
And so to have one that was like, this sand is somehow precious, was never the case.
Yeah, that, I mean, we have a lot of ants up here as well, but it – both of the places I remember growing up, both of our houses, I had a dedicated sandbox. And that sandbox was full of those army men.
Mm.
And I had the little plastic robots that were about the same size and the same kind of thing, but they were robots. And so I ended up with a lot of that same battle type stuff between army guys and robots.
That's cool.
And the sand, the cool thing about the sand was that if you wet it, it would, you know, like at the beach, you can mold it into like bridges and caves and all that type of stuff. So we would do a lot of making little, like a little mound, and then you dig out a tunnel underneath it, and then you set up some roads and some guys, and then you put black cats, firecrackers, inside the cave.
Yep.
So as a truck is driving over, oh no, we broke down on top of the bridge, and then it would explode.
You don't want to do
that. Yeah. So we did a lot of that, but it was all contained within the sandbox, which was probably really good for my parents. And then at one point, I remember
we were
dad,
lucky that my friend Francisco, his mom worked late.
I remember at one point my dad made covers for the sandboxes because there was some like random cat that showed up and started using it as a litter box. So we had these like metal grate covers that we had to take off every time. Yeah, sandboxes. Man, kids these days don't have sandboxes.
I would not make my kids a sandbox just because, in my head, a sandbox is a place. I know here in Kentucky, you don't have fire ants. Like, that's not a thing. But, like, it's a place for ants, and it just eventually becomes, like, hard-packed mud because it rains so much. But the conditions are different. It's not Florida up here.
Yeah.
But that in Florida was a sandbox became just an ant-filled mud hole.
Yeah, I think there's enough terrain here that, I mean, I would probably send my kids off to just, like, find something in the woods before making them a sandbox. But
Yeah.
Either way, I remember having a whole lot of fun with it. Except that I was the kid that, you know, there were sandbox toys and there were not sandbox toys.
Yeah.
Transformers don't go in the sandbox. Like, that's a terrible idea because they don't transform correctly. They get all scratched up. My cousin, who's awesome and an engineer now, and I'm not trying to talk bad about you, Ryan, even though you're not listening. My cousin did not have that distinction between toys being for one thing and not for another.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just me having issues. I don't know.
You're protective over things.
Yeah. But, man, he would show up to play, and it was – I felt like I was – the adult, like, nope, 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 can't put that there. No, no, that's got to stay inside. No. You know, I was that kid about my stuff. So sorry, Ryan. Anyway. All right, back to life. I don't know how we even got to all that. Doesn't matter. What else has been going on? Got a new car.
Yep.
Jeep's gone.
Yep.
What else?
Should I talk about the hospital? I had to go to the hospital the other day, which I don't like to admit. But yeah, I was having like some weird heart palpitations. I talked to a couple people about this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was just like, every once in a while, apparently it's really common, where you just have this weird little like heart flutter and kind of takes your breath away. Sometimes you can get dizzy or whatever. That never really happened, but it just kind of takes your breath away. You got to sit down and take a breath. But it happened a lot in one particular day. That was the day that I drank coffee when I don't normally drink coffee. And it was a day where stuff was particularly stressful because there's just a lot of stuff that's been stressful. And it worried me so bad that I actually went to the emergency room for the first time in God knows how long, where I go there by myself. I went by myself. My wife wanted to go, and I told her no. If I was going to die, I was going to die by myself.
like a man.
Like a golden retriever in a field. But no, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't want to wake everybody up because we only had one car at the time. So I was like, no, we're not doing this. So... And apparently the hospital didn't really care much either because I was like, I think I'm dying. My heart's going to explode.
And they're like, nah, you're fine.
Nah, you just go sit over there for a while. And they hooked me up and I guess there's these things called PACES, P-A-C-S, PACES, premature, not a ventricle, atrium. So a premature atrial compressions, which your heart is a muscle and it works by electrical signals. And apparently my heart, every once in a while, a lot of people do, it's not a unique thing, just like fires when it doesn't need to fire and just causes that little kind of flutter, palpitation, hiccup kind of feeling. And they're like, yeah, it's not a big deal. I'm like, well, you should tell my heart because it would beg to differ. And so they gave me some medicine and I have to wear a monitor.
Mm.
So I went to my actual doctor yesterday. They're like, well, you're going to go to the cardiologist. And, like, it wasn't a heart attack. Like, nothing about it was a heart attack. Like I said, my blood work was perfect because you have these enzymes that are activated whenever you have cardiac, like, actual cardiac distress. And none of those were there. And so I have to wear this little monitor, which I have to, like, shave a part of my chest. And ooh. I have to stick this thing to me for, like, a week. And it just, like, uploads my heart activity over, I don't know, whatever period of time. And if I have one of these little things, I can hit a little button. It's like, hey, it happened right now. Like, Target store, that little moment in time.
Huh.
Yeah, but, like, there's a bunch of stuff they want to do, which is just monitoring.
Yeah.
They think I might have sleep apnea.
Mm.
Yeah. Which I've heard before.
Yeah.
And when I was in the Army, it was like the buzzword when you're getting out. Like, go get a sleep study because you probably got sleep apnea. Like, everybody had sleep apnea. And I'm like, no, I sleep fine. But when I'm asleep, I don't recognize that I snore pretty loud, apparently. Yeah. Anytime we go somewhere and we have to share a hotel room, Anthony says I snore. And, I mean, that's fine. I didn't think I snored in like an annoying level. My wife sleeps pretty hard, so she didn't really care much. But some of the stuff can be related to sleep apnea.
To be clear, though, I don't think apnea is about being annoying. I don't think that's the problem of it.
I don't notice.
Okay.
But apparently Carrie Fisher died from sleep apnea. She had
really?
Yeah, she had cardiac arrest due to sleep apnea on an airplane.
Whoa.
Yeah. Crazy. So if Princess Leia can die, anybody can. But no. That's true. So that stuff, we got to explore that, which, like, means I might have to wear a CPAP machine, which is, like, a thing when I sleep. And, like, ugh, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But then I've seen people on TikTok that, like, there was a guy that tried out his sleep apnea machine for the first time. And he woke up and he was like, that was the best sleep I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't have bad sleep. I sleep pretty sound. Like, I'm really good at sleeping to the point where apparently I can overcome this horrible thing and not even notice that it's there.
But I think I had a checkup recently, and that was also brought up to me, just talking about general fatigue and stuff. And I think from my understanding, you don't really know how bad you're sleeping because it happens slowly over time, and you just think that's what sleep is. And so when you start to correct the apnea, the sleep is more productive.
Sure.
And so it pays off better, like, throughout the day. And
because
she brought that up to me as well. Like, you know, I don't know if she was asking me if I snored a lot for that same reason. And I said, I don't think that I do. I mean, I don't hear about it from anyone very often. She was like, okay, well, if you're feeling, you know, exhausted or whatever on a regular basis, it could be as a downstream result of just getting like less than ideal sleep from apnea. So.
Well, the doctor I saw yesterday was the first person that I talked to that like connected all of the dots from the heart things. You know, it's like stress, stimulant, exercise induced. But it doesn't happen whenever I exercise. It just, I don't know. I was like, well, I had a cup of coffee. That's probably it. I'm being punished because I had a cup of coffee when I don't normally have coffee. And they were like, that shouldn't be it. I'm like, well, yeah, I agree. But I don't know. I got nothing else to point to. And so I might have to get a sleep study where I might have to like pay the doctor for me to take a nap, which feels overly insulting.
But you have to take a nap in a place with stuff strapped to you.
Like, I had to do that at the emergency room. So I went in there and I'm like, all right, I'm ready to see a doctor because I'm scared and I think my heart's about to stop. And they're like, well, we'll hook you up to an EKG, which is a series of like leads on your body, and it's a heart monitor. And they're like, well, the doctor will be in, you know, doctors are busy. And it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And they're like, we only have one and there's stuff going on. So I just took a nap for like 4 hours and then a nurse came in and then left. And I was like, did you guys forget about me? Because this is emergency room and I know it takes a long time. And I'm trying not to be kind of a butthole. And they're like, oh, well, the more doctors come in at 11. I'm like, ugh. No, no, that's long, long time.
Yeah.
And so he finally came in and talked to me, and then I ended up leaving. But, yeah.
Yeah, the sleep study does not sound like fun. Doesn't sound like something I would want to do.
It I mean, seems I'm like all about taking a nap.
Well, yeah, I think it's having stuff strapped to you. And
And I think that's like the CPAP stuff I was thinking about last night when I go to sleep. And everybody sleeps like in different comfort, like your go-to sleep position.
Yeah.
And like my go-to sleep position is not conducive for me to wear like a mask or like hoses and stuff on my face. But I'm like, people do it all the time. I don't know how people do it. Like, I know people who sleep with CPAP machines. I should just talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just seemed intrusive.
Yeah.
Just roll over and like, hey, baby. Well, you're like,
let me take my mask
Ultron
off and give you a kiss
on your face.
So, a few at some point in the last, since we recorded, I don't know, I went to stand up and threw my back out. In like a very serious, very, very painful way. Never have I had anything like that in my life. And in those few days of not being able to, I mean, for about 2 days, I was having trouble standing up. Just being on my feet hurt so bad it would take my breath away. But part of that was having to relax the muscles in my lower back. And I sleep on my stomach. And so when you sleep on your stomach, it engages the lower back muscles, like you don't really want to sleep like that. So that could be part of fatigue and everything as well. But part of getting that to loosen up is trying to sleep on my back instead of on my stomach. And when you've been sleeping one way for your entire life, to then try to switch it and go to sleep is very hard. And after a few days, I got to where I could do it. I could stay on my back, go to sleep, and wake up on my back. But it's tough. Like, you're just natural. You know, I mean, your body wants to do a certain thing to get comfortable, and I don't know. In that case, though, it was like, well, I can be on my stomach, but I'm used to be, I'm comfortable that way, but I'm not actually comfortable because it hurts so bad. Or I can just be on my back and deal with it, and it doesn't hurt quite as bad.
See, if I'm sleeping on my back, I know I'm snoring.
Mm.
Like, I can feel it.
Oh,
just that position is like, and you kind of wake yourself up.
Yeah.
But apparently that's what sleep apnea is. It's when you just stop breathing and your body's response to you not breathing is to just like give you the Jimmy legs real quick to wake you up and to breathe again. Yeah. I mean, that's not a medical term, giving you the Jimmy legs to breathe again.
No, it's not. I
minored in medicine in community college. But yeah, I mean, when I was in the Army, when I would have to sleep on a cot, I can't sleep on a cot the same way I sleep on my bed because I sleep like on my kind of side with like my leg rolled over. Like the Green Army Man. The Green Army Man who's crawling on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you could put like a pillow under one of his arms.
One knee stuck out.
Yeah, that's how I sleep.
Gotcha.
My arm underneath a pillow. My other arm, I have a huggy pillow. That's why I call it. I have a huggy pillow for a long time. and so not sleeping like that is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so on a cot, like I could never sleep like that in the Army. And so I had to like train myself just to fall asleep in a more uncomfortable position than I was used to. And I mean, you can. And it didn't, like, I didn't notice that it affected it. It just took me a lot longer to fall asleep because it's not just like,
right.
A nice little comforting position.
Well, because of my back problem, I ended up going to the doctor right after that. And, you know, she gave me some muscle relaxers, which I took for a couple of days just to get it loosened up. And, but she, at the same time, went ahead and scheduled like a, you know, just a well check kind of. I hadn't been to the doctor in a long time. And so I came back after a few weeks and did a bunch of tests and stuff just to make sure that, you know, I'm not getting old too fast and all that. Yeah, it turns out I am, but whatever. Can't do anything about that. But then through that whole thing, I decided to, my blood pressure's high. So like I'm on blood pressure medicine now. And, I decided to start tracking that, and I was like, well, if I'm going to track this with a like a smart blood pressure cuff, I'm like, oh, they have like scales too. So I got these two things that work together, and they just automatically track it, put it in your Apple Health stuff, so my doctor can actually see all of that real time, which is pretty awesome. But in that few days of, oh, okay, well, I'm going to start tracking this thing. I'm going to start tracking my weight just so I can see how it changes over time. And instead of just running now, I'm going to start actually working out. Like I'm going to, I got like a workout plan for this app that I found. And so I've been like going back and forth between running and doing this little just body weight workout stuff at home. And it's been really weird to put, I mean, because I historically have run a lot, but that's all I do.
Yeah.
And so now it's kind of weird to have to kind of split that. Like I feel like I should be running more just because I'm used to doing it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have to do this workout stuff to improve my core so that my back doesn't go out, because the doctor was like, you're just going to get older, and if your back goes out like it did now, it's going to do it again, and it's going to keep doing it, so you have to build those muscles up. So part of getting older, I know, is trying to maintain and improve like your muscle structure and everything so that you just don't wear out too quickly, like in the long term. But I'm already faced with like, not that I'm wearing out now, but I'm trying to avoid having to go through that pain again. But I have to remind myself every day, okay, it's not because you want to be strong, it's because you don't want to be in pain. So just go do the workout so that you're not stuck in bed for another couple of days, because that was really, really terrible. Yeah. I've never felt like that before. So I'm having to shift a bunch of that stuff around and get out of just the habit of only running, even though that's what I'm comfortable with. I can do it without thinking about it, whatever.
Yeah.
I have to do extra work now. But part of getting old, I guess.
Ugh.
Well, what else is up?
Oh, my son got glasses.
Oh, he did get them.
Yeah. Have you seen him? No, I haven't seen him yet.
You told me about it.
Man, it's nuts. It is insane. So my son is 12. And he was talking about, like, not being able to see the board. And I guess I'm just a bad parent. I'm like, whatever. Quit lying. Liar. But, like, most of your kids have glasses. And so he's around people with glasses. And he was like, I think I need glasses. I'm like, no, you don't. Knock it off. Stop this. Everybody thinks it would be cool to have glasses just because they don't have glasses. And then I keep hearing from my wife that, like, when he's at their co-op school day on Friday, like, he has to sit in a certain place. And he was like, well, it's a weird color, and I can't read. I'm like, I can't read that either. Get over it. Stop lying. You just want the attention. And apparently she took him to the eye doctor. And the eye doctor was like, yeah, he needs glasses because he's nearsighted, which is weird. It's weird for me.
Why is that weird?
I don't know. I have better than 20/20 vision. My wife has better than 20/20 vision. Like, my parents didn't need glasses until they were just older and needed to read. And so it just seems really weird. And I guess me thinking that most medical problems are genetic, I'm like, well, it's not genetic. I'm like, well, he's been reading since he was a tiny kid. I'm like, maybe reading all them books ruined his eyes. He needs to play more video games.
That'll do it.
And so I don't know. It's just strange, and it seems out of nowhere. that, like, I didn't believe it was true because there were no indicators in his medical history that would lead me to believe it would be a thing. But, like, well, okay, I guess he needs glasses. And so the day that I went to go get the car, he was picking out his frames and his lenses. So, like, I pulled up into the driveway in this family paradigm-shifting vehicle where I look at my kid, who is now a magically an adult because he has glasses on, and he just looks different. And I've never had to have glasses, so the people that I know in my life who needed glasses when they didn't have them before were older. Hmm. And I took a picture of him the other day. He was doing a research paper on my wife's computer. And so he's just like legit typing, not like hunting, pecking like a little kid. He's like typing on the computer with his glasses on at the dinner table. I'm like, who is this stranger? Who is this person? And now every time he walks past me, I'm like, this is nuts. Like, you are now way older. And he's already been real mature for his age and all those things. But like him just putting glasses on, like, is messing me up.
Yeah. One of ours, who's had glasses for several years, recently started wearing contacts for soccer because it's just easier than having glasses. And it's weird. That's like an additional level of, you know, I need them. I know I need them, but glasses are in the way. And so I'm going to figure out this other thing. And it's like another thing to keep up with. And I don't know. It's been a little strange. But, I mean, with the glass, like, even though you all haven't needed them, he's at an age where his body's doing all sorts of weird things. And I have heard of people needing glasses in adolescence and then their teenage years and then not needing them later on.
Hmm.
So that is a possibility. I don't know.
Well, now my daughter, who has the most outrageous case of FOMO, is like, I think I need glasses too. Yeah, and I'm like, stop. Everybody stop.
Yeah.
I barely believe the one who needed it. I definitely don't believe you.
Well, like, some of our kids have friends who wear fake glasses because they think it looks cool. And I, as someone who wears glasses, I've never understood that. Like,
I tried the blue lens glasses because I was on the computer all the time and I started getting headaches. And it gave me worse headaches.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Never mind.
Yup.
Well, no, like, there was a thing back in the day where it was like, it made people look a little different, and it was like some identity thing. And I'm sure it was just as much of the hipster stuff that happened recently, but it was like, oh, let me wear your glasses. I look smarter and I look this, and it was some kind of transformational thing, even though you didn't really need it.
I specifically remember when the original Batman movie came out. I was seventh
grade. Keaton,
Batman? Yeah, Michael Keaton. I was seventh grade or sixth or seventh or something like that, and I had just gotten my glasses for the first time. And there's a scene in that movie where, you know, he's Batman the whole time and then he's Bruce Wayne and he's looking all suave and everything. There's this one scene where he's like by himself at his desk.
He's brooding?
He's in a black turtleneck and he has these like wireframe glasses on. And I remember him like taking these glasses off and he's like all serious and cool.
This is revelation stance.
And that, that stuck out to me. And I remember, because I had just gotten glasses at the time. And I remember thinking, like, man, he looks really cool.
I'm Batman now.
So if I want to be a superhero, my alter ego needs to have really cool glasses.
He definitely made it. He made it look better than Christopher Reeves did as Superman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Clark Kent took his glasses off to be cool.
Could you imagine if Superman wore a turtleneck?
Oh, man.
It just wouldn't work. It would work with Batman, like Bruce Wayne kind of
makes
works.
Me uncomfortable right now.
Turtlenecks are terrible. But
did you ever watch Archer?
No,
there was a cartoon on FX about this spy, and it was pretty crass. But he used to wear this turtleneck, and he would all the time. And they're like, why are you wearing it? He's like, it's a tactical turtleneck. It's my tactile neck.
Nope, never saw that one.
And I remember seeing it when I was in the Army. And because I was aviation, we couldn't wear a lot of like the cold weather stuff because a lot of it was made out of polyester and stuff. And so they gave us these cotton turtlenecks to wear underneath our uniform that no one else in the Army wore. So we used to get yelled at when we'd walk around for having some stupid piece of clothing that we weren't allowed to wear, but we were. And it became like, you got to wear your tactical turtleneck.
No. Oh, yeah.
My tactile neck.
Tactile neck.
I'm missing a bag from bag four here, Castle.
Mm.
I've looked.
Well, all of our stuff has been shifted around quite a bit, so it's possible that it got thrown away.
Or something. That would suck. Well, it should have been in bag four. And I open bag four.
It's not a separate bag four?
There should be a separate bag.
Separate.
Like a baby bag inside mama bag. And there's not.
I don't have it. Well, anything else we want to chat through?
Man, I don't know. So we're going to try to make this a regular thing again.
Yeah.
So another reason that like we haven't been in here is that Bob has been recording a new online course that we're going to be offering probably around the beginning of the year-ish, I think we've determined.
Yeah.
So the Fusion 360 for Makers course has been great. We've had a lot of positive feedback that it's helped a lot of people, which is fantastic. And so we wanted to keep doing that because it was effective. You want to tell people what you've said what it's about, right?
Yeah. I talked about it on Making It a little bit. We're doing an Arduino for Makers course. So basically taking my history with software and experience with electronics, which isn't, you know, I'm not like an electrical engineer or anything, but I've been messing with it for a long time. And trying to break all that stuff down in the most basic terms. So if you have no programming experience, no electronics experience, we can walk you through all the different stuff to get you up and running. And the whole point is to come up with an idea and be able to turn around and program it and plug it together, you know, and like physically make a thing happen in front of you. So that's the goal of it. And I think we're getting there. Still got a lot of work to do, but recording that in here has affected the studio setup and all that stuff. So that's been a little bit of why we haven't recorded in a while. But I think we're at a point with it now to where we can get back to recording this on a regular basis. So hopefully we will do that.
So I'm excited about this course.
Yeah.
Because as when I found the channel, that idea that you could blend like plywood and electronic stuff was like a cool little Venn diagram sliver that I think you and I like to make stuff fits in kind of perfectly.
Mm.
And so if that has ever been an interest in trying to automate things or make a thing do a thing when you do something else, like this is that course to take you from never having done it to actually programming a thing to do something cool.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about this course because that's something that I've always wanted to get better at.
Good.
And I've had to stumble and mumble through it. And then whenever we do a project, you just kind of like do it. And we're like, well, it still needs to be programmed. You're like, I did that already and it works great. And I'm like, ah, crap.
No, I spent several weeks doing that on the side and now it's done. That's what that means.
Yeah, so that'll be out. If you think that that's something that's valuable to us, reach out on social media and let us know because we're making the course as we think that it would be valuable for other people, just like we did the Fusion course. So if there's something that you want to know so that we can try to make sure that what we are offering actually matches up with demand, like reach out on social media and let us know.
Yeah, for sure. Big thanks to the Maker Alliance for hanging around for so long, even though we haven't recorded this in a while. We've had a lot of new people join over there, which has been fantastic. The Discord server is hopping.
It's booming.
There's a lot going on over there. But we've had a lot of people come in the last couple of months, and it's been great to see new faces in the Hangouts and stuff like that. And they get like they'll get a discount on that course.
Yep.
Maker Alliance will get discounts on that, on all the plans and everything. There's a bunch of perks, but honestly, the biggest thing is the community. That group of people, they hang out on the Discord, but they also get together at the summer camp thing, and it's a really fantastic community. And I'm glad to be a part of that community myself.
Yeah.
Like, not just that they're helping us, that's fantastic as well, but I'm glad that we're a part of what they're already doing over there. So if you want to join that, we got links down below. All that type of stuff. It also helps support this show and all the I Like to Make stuff. So
we're going to be reaching out to them for more pros and cons now that we're going to be doing this regularly.
Yeah.
And oh, one thing that they told me about.
Hmm?
Did you know that Patreon has a community tab?
I did not.
Neither did I. But apparently the Maker Alliance did because there's a lot of people on there that make posts. And so it's a place where people who are patrons of any given channel can talk amongst themselves or talk directly to the creator, not in like a private message, but a more open kind of like Facebook feed-esque type thing. I didn't know it existed.
I didn't either.
Someone was like, oh, did you see the bracket that somebody put up on the community tab? I'm like, I don't know any of these words. And so I checked it out, and there is a member of the Maker Alliance who created, very scientifically, a championship bracketed, like roster bracket, like we did for Christmas movies before the MCU. TV shows and movies. Gave the original Avengers origin movies by weeks, so they automatically get to, it's really good. He did a lot of good work. So we should probably do that on the show one of these times.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, Patreon's not great about telling you about all the features that they offer.
I guess, the Patreon manager, and I felt kind of bad that I went back and there's like people asking us questions, and I was like, whoops.
Well,
I know about it now.
Yeah, now we know.
My bad.
I just finished my Vespa.
That looks cool.
Yeah. It's got a little basket with some flowers, a little helmet.
Those are cute flowers.
Pretty cool. I need to get my Vespa running. All right, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for coming back with us, and we will see you very soon.
Bye-bye. Bye. You did a different sign-off, and I'm
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.